Session number 8744.
Mr. Grinham, reel 2. So, were your 2 periods a day set aside for both transmission and reception?
Yes.
Did you receive just as well as you transmitted?
Yes.
What wavelength did you use?
I can't remember exactly, but it was between 8 and 16 megacycles.
Why were those wavelengths chosen, do you know?
I think it was because it was the most suitable ones.
Because of lack of other traffic?
I don't really know.
Did you ever have any trouble with the equipment?
None. We used in our radio transmissions in establishing contact an adaptation of the Q code, which enabled us in just 3 letters in each signal to say what traffic we had, and they too could tell us the same way. So say QTC 5 would be you're on full strength. I forget the exact letters now, but if they gave another signal with say Q something 2, we knew we had to receive 2 messages, or I could say I've got 2 messages for you. And the Q code cut time on the air down very, very much.
Is this Q code an internationally known code?
Yes, it's an international Q code, but it was adapted from it to suit our own purposes.
So you invented your own version of it?
It was invented for us
By SOE.
by SOE, yes.
You've mentioned the organisation of this airstrike on the lorry convoy. Were there any other incidents like this that you recollect?
Well, we gave other targets, but there's nothing that I can particularly recall at the moment. We were continually supplying dispositions of German troops to back to England so that they could sort it out and pick out what they wanted. If there was any use to them.
Did you operate undisturbed, or did you have any close escapes from the Germans?
We had one or two narrow escapes, one in particular. One afternoon, the two German cars came down, or two Citroëns with Germans on board, and each with a MG34 mounted on the top, and they shot at us. But we gave as good as we got, and they didn't stop. One of the Mackie was killed. We thought they were going to attack, so we got ourselves ready to move in a hurry. We knew that if we were caught there, we'd be really in trouble, and so would the farmers. They would have lost their home and their lives. But they were very, very good to us. They didn't let us down.
Where did you move to?
We moved into the woods, but we stayed very, very close, but we weren't bothered after that. We didn't have any close shaves at all. There was one scare one night, but it was obviously a soldier from this shot-up convoy who was injured and staggered into our camp, and he was caught. And then the following day, the Mackie shot him and buried him, made him dig his own grave and buried him.
Did they shoot him just because he was a German soldier?
Yes. They'd suffered very, very greatly in that area. In fact, 2 nurses had been raped in Bussière. There's a memorial to those 2 nurses to this day. And the Mackie were quite unmerciful.
How was he treated before he was shot?
I didn't see much of him. But he was not beaten up or anything like that. I think he was questioned, and then I saw them lead him away with a spade, and not long after I heard the rattle of Sten guns and came back. They'd taken him down a farm track nearby. I saw the blood stains afterwards, and then a little stick where they'd buried him.
What did the attitude of the Maquis to the Germans seem to be?
Hostile. They didn't like the German occupation at all.
How did they express their hostility?
Very vociferously. And if they could get at the Germans, they did do, by any means.
Can you give an example?
Water in petrol drums. And in any way in which they could disrupt the Germans' movement.
What kind of people did the members of the Maquis seem to be?
Well, it was mainly farming country, and most of them were farmers or farm labourers. They were completely untrained militarily.
What type of age were they?
Well, from 16 to about 40.
Were they all men?
All men.
Did they express any political point of view?
No, not that I can recall.
Do you know if they had any political affiliation?
I wouldn't have any idea. They were men who just wanted to get back to peacetime and live their own life in their own way.
Did you like them?
Yes, I got on with them very well.
What type of standard of living did they seem to be having?
Well, they were having to rough it. They were living in the farm outbuildings, on the hay and so on. And that was the way they were having to live. There were others in the woods further away, and they too were having to rough it. Living off the land.
Did you have much to do with the French civilian population?
No, we were too far out into the country.
Did you speak any French yourself?
Very little.
Do you think that was necessary?
It would have been a help if I had have been fluent in French.
In what way would it have helped you?
In general conversation.
Were you given much instruction about what to expect in occupied France before you went?
Yes, we had quite a few lectures. But of course conditions would vary an awful lot from place to place.
What type of things did they tell you in Britain?
Well, I can't really remember now. But we were told that the French had, of course, been deprived of many of the normal things of life, and things were very, very short, and we were not to expect too much from the French in the way of food. But where we were in the country, we did actually very well in many respects because the food was not going into the bigger markets.
What kind of living standard did you have, personally?
Quite reasonable. I was quite happy with it. The French people shared what they'd got and were very happy to do so. They kept quite a lot of chickens and rabbits, and at that time of the year, of course, there was also quite a lot of mushrooms, wild mushrooms, and we used to go and gather them and help the farm people to prepare them and did what we could to help them.
Did the briefing in the UK before you went out to France deal with do's and don'ts in France?
Yes, but I can't remember particularly what they were now. The main thing was to keep under cover and not to expose yourself too much because we would have been too conspicuous.
Did they say anything about how not to give yourself away easily?
Well, that was taught in general field craft. Keeping out of sight and melting into the countryside, if you like.
But was there anything that you recollect specifically which might have given you away as an Englishman?
Well, I think the mannerisms of the French people were something that one can't pick up. You can pick up a foreigner in England usually by their appearance and by their general demeanour. And of course I could be equally conspicuous in France by the same reckoning.
Did you ever come across any elements in the French population who were pro-German or anti-British?
No, but I knew of them. There was, just after the Germans were driven out, there was a couple of collaborators, man and wife, who were really beaten up and shot by the Mackie, because they had been collaborators with the Germans. But I never came into contact with them.
Did you see it?
No.
Who told you about it?
My French officer.
What did he say they had done in the way of collaboration?
Oh, entertaining the Germans, and I suppose acting as traitors in giving information away to the Germans, which they shouldn't have had.
Whereabouts did they live?
I don't know exactly, but it was not very far away.
Did he say anything about why they had collaborated?
No. We just knew that it had happened.
Were you told much about what to expect if you were captured by the Germans?
It came into the training, yes.
What was told you?
I can't remember particularly, but the main thing was not to give any information away that would have been any use to them. We would have expected to have been roughly treated and probably lost our lives. So the thing was, survive, kill or be killed.
Were you told that you shouldn't, if you were captured by the Germans, that you shouldn't speak at all, or that you should tell them a pack of lies?
Well, we had a cover story as to what we were doing there. I was supposed to have been a labourer from Marseille, and I'd made my way into the country, and that was it. But it would have soon been broken because the mere fact that I couldn't speak French very well.
Did you feel worried about being captured?
I never thought about it.
Why was that?
The thing was not to get captured.
Were you kept busy or were you bored?
I was kept busy with encoding and decoding and, of course, helping to train the Mackie in use of arms, how to strip down the guns and reassemble them, how to use them. That was the main thing. If I was not on my radio set, that was the main thing that I was doing.
Did you have a lot of spare time on your hands?
Not a lot. Not a lot. But I got to know the some of the locals quite well, and we became very friendly. One of them could speak quite good English. He was a school teacher. And through him we were able to translate and go through this little bit of military training. I couldn't show them anything about the radio because that, of course, would take a long, long time to train them. But it was mostly to do with small arms.
Were you ever bored?
No. Didn't have time to be bored.
Now, can you sketch the movements that you were involved in as you move from place to place? After the time you landed?
Well, after we went from Rivière-les-Fosses, we'd heard that the Germans were making a search. They knew a team had arrived, so we had to move. Now, fortunately for us, the Germans started to search the other end of the village as we went out the other in one of these gas-driven vans, or charcoal-driven vans. So we got away there and across country, and that's where we finished up at the farm. Well, I think I suppose about 15 or 20 miles away. But once we got to this farm at near Bussière, we stayed there.
Were you there the whole time?
Yes. Yes.
How long was that?
3 weeks.
And what happened at the end of 3 weeks?
Well, the first French army came up from the south and overran the position, and then our job was finished and we made our way to Paris and came back to England.
How did the French troops greet you?
We didn't see them in the country. They'd gone into the towns.
Did you have any problems with hostility from any French officers?
None at all.
How did you get out of France?
We had to make our own way to Paris. We made had to go to one particular hotel where we'd been directed to. We waited there for a couple of days, and then we were flown back in a Dakota to London. We were debriefed and sent back to Peterborough.
What date would this have been?
At the end of September 1944.
What did they ask you in the debriefing?
Well, my main debriefing was to do with my radio communications, how things had gone both ways, what service we'd had, and in general, how things had gone.
Are there any other incidents that you'd like to recollect that were left out?
There was only one incident. One afternoon, we had two jeeps come up, and we found that they were a party of SAS who were making their way on back tracks and back lanes and shooting up Germans as they came through them. They stayed the night with us. Well, there were jeeps had crews of three, a driver, an officer, and a gunner. But the officer was also a gunner. He had twin Vickers mounted on the front, and the other gunner was pointing to the rear with another Vickers. They stayed the night with us. We did some radio operating for them, and they went off the next day. They were just going, working at random, shooting at where they could.
They were a kind of hit squad, were they?
Hit squad, yes, yeah. Freelance.
Where was this?
At the farm, near Bussière.
Did they tell you anything about what they'd accomplished?
No. They didn't even tell us where they landed. They kept themselves to themselves. The less we knew, the less we could tell if we were caught.
Once you'd had your debriefing, did you continue your service with SOE?
Yes, I went on leave. While I was in London being debriefed, I was asked if I was prepared to go out to Southeast Asia, which I, after a few minutes' thought, said yes, I'd go. I went on leave, came back, did a bit more training, and then we were shipped out to via Bombay to Horana in Ceylon.
To where?
Horana. It's a small training camp. Military Establishment 25. It's Horana, which was the training base for Force 136 personnel.
And what did you understand the role of Force 136 to be?
Much the same as in France, but in rather different conditions. We would be operating in much more hostile territory, not only military-wise, and of course the type of country in general. Instead of operating in European type, we would be operating in jungle.
Whereabouts specifically did you expect to operate?
When we didn't know exactly where we were going to operate. We knew it would be somewhere in Southeast Asia, because there were several country sections. There's the Burma country section, the Siam country section, the French Indochina country section, and the Malay country section.
And which section were you allocated to?
Went to the Burma country section.
Did you have any choice in that?
No, it was just the luck of the draw.
And
I was teamed up with a different team there, because the French officer naturally stayed in France. The British officer, he didn't come out with us. He came out on a later draft. So I was a spare operator, and I was teamed up with Major Campbell and Major Blathwaite.
Were the teams organised in the same way?
Much the same way, yes. Except we were all British.
Had the two officers with whom you were teamed up any particular knowledge of Burma?
I don't know about Major Campbell, because he hadn't been in England, as far as I know. I'd never met him before. I don't know how long he'd been out in Southeast Asia. But Major Blathwaite, he came out on the same draft as myself, and he'd no jungle training at all.
So what training do you have for Burma?
We were supposed to have had 3 months jungle training in Ceylon, but it never materialised. The first I saw of the jungle was when I dropped into it.
Why was that?
I don't know. They wanted an operator, and I was available, so I was used. We'd had lectures on jungle and jungle warfare, how to look after oneself, but that was all.
What did the lectures tell you?
The way the Japs operated, and how to avoid ambushes, how to set up ambushes, and how to look after oneself, tropical hygiene. The thing was, if you were in the jungle, you had no doctor, so you had to look after yourself.
What did the advice on tropical hygiene consist of, specifically?
Well, personal hygiene, not eating fruit. We'd had broken skins. How to make certain that you didn't get any infected cuts, to treat them straight away. How to treat dysentery, what medicines to take, and in general things like that.
What type of diseases did you expect to have to contend with?
The main thing was malaria and dysentery, and they hammered home the personal care of yourself as regards malaria, particularly with rolling down sleeves, rolling down your trousers, or wearing long sleeves and long trousers to stop the mosquitoes getting at you.
Did you have any prophylactic drugs?
Yes, we had had to start taking Mepocrin, which was a suppressant, not a cure. And it did keep the malaria away. We also had sizable issues of, what's the name of it? We had sizable issues of chlorine to purify the water in our water bottles, so that you wouldn't get dysentery through drinking infected water.
And what did they tell you about the setting of ambushes?
It was all done on drawing boards, or blackboards, showing what to do if the Japs used to operate one particular way and we used to have to work another way to try and avoid them so that we could escape from them.
What do you mean, work one particular way?
Well, the Japs had a typical setup when they were setting up their ambushes, and we had to counteract that by going, how can I put it, by going a different way.
But how would the Japanese set up an ambush?
Well, I can't really tell you now, it's too long ago.
Oh, you said that you were taught how the Japanese operated. What was said to you about the way in which they operated?
Well, it was all demonstrated too on the blackboard, the way they used to set, they had a set pattern. So we had to work a way around, away from that pattern.
When were you actually dropped?
We went to Jessore, just outside Calcutta, in January 1945, and we dropped into Burma on the evening of the 25th of January. There was supposed to have been a reception committee sent by another team who dropped in just after Christmas, and that reception committee didn't arrive. We decided that we would not go back to Calcutta and we would go in blind. And we went to a different place from where the drop had been originally arranged in case the dropping ground had been compromised. And we went in blind.
Do you know whereabouts you dropped?
It was near Dalat in the Arakan.
Why that particular place?
Well, that was the area in which we were going to operate. The Japanese had built a road across western Burma, and we went in to see what traffic was using it, Jap dispositions along it, and what bearing it would have in general in the Japanese retreat and the British advance. General Christison had requested this, although I didn't know it at that time that it was General Christison.
What instructions did you have about the local population in Burma?
Very little. We had to find our own way. We didn't know anyone at all, and we just had to make our own way, make our own friends, and we were very, very lucky on our drop.
Why was that?
Well, we dropped into a big paddy field, and there was a small village by the side of it, and we dropped into the headman's paddy field, and he did not like the Japanese because they were always taking his rice. He was glad to see the British back, and he helped us. In fact, he was a real tower of strength to us. He helped us in every way he could.
What was his name?
I don't know, I can't remember.
Did he speak English?
No. Our team also included three Arakanese, Barsaw, Yeong, Ongzo, who could all speak English, but Barsaw was the interpreter, and he and Major Kemble approached the headman in the middle of the night, and that's how we got started.
What kind of men were these three Arakanese?
I can't really describe them. They were trained militarily, but they were very, very good men, very good chaps.
Had they been in the British Army?
I don't know whether they belonged to any military unit or not. I've no idea. They wore military uniforms.